From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Aside from the obvious, Mormon millennials aren't all that different from their peers in their attitudes about social issues and popular culture and, of course, religion. Millennials are more inclined to leave the faith of their youth than other generations. As the religion scholar Jana Reese put it recently, almost every religion in America is bleeding. But Reese wanted to know exactly how Mormon millennials are different from others in their generation, in their attitudes about God and sex and drinking alcohol, stuff like that. So along with a colleague, she designed a thorough survey. More than 1,500 people participated, and today in the program, we're going over some of the results, some of which may surprise you, but some of this won't surprise you at all. They're different. Find out how after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So in a lot of ways, Mormon millennials, this youngest generation of adult Latter-day Saints, are pretty much just like their parents or their grandparents. The way they think of God, for example, there's no big difference here. Their belief in the power of prayer, same thing. In fact, in a lot of religious teachings, there isn't really much of a generation gap. In fact, in some cases, Mormon millennials are more traditional, more conservative than the old folks. Mormon millennials are likely to believe literally in scriptures, more likely than older generations, for example. They're more likely to seek counsel from a bishop than older generations. But once you start getting into the details about how to live that religion or leave that religion, things get different quick. In particular ways that make sense or will totally surprise you, Jana Reese is a religion scholar, a popular Mormon blogger, and last fall, she and a colleague, Benjamin Knoll, went into the field with a study. They call it the Next Mormons Survey, and now they have the results, which they're going to be sharing in a number of ways over the next months, articles, presentations. Reese is writing a book about these Next Mormons. She's also a senior columnist for Religion News Service. She's the author of Flunking Sainthood and Mormonism for Dummies. She's going to be speaking next week at the Sunstone Magazine's Summer Symposium in Salt Lake City. You can get details about that on our website. We'll give you more as we go along. Today, she's joining us from a studio in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Jana Reese, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
I guess I wanted to begin with kind of a disclaimer. One of the things that you've talked about, and we should point out right up the bat, is that Mormon millennials are not much different from other millennials in their religious perspectives in some certain ways. That is to say that millennials are different all across the board, not just, this is not just a Mormon thing.
Well, compared to their peers, so non-Mormons who are of that 18 to 36 age group, Mormon millennials are actually quite a bit more religious, the ones who are still in the church, than other millennials are. But they're not all that different in terms of belief from their parents and grandparents. You pointed that out beautifully. In terms of their religious orthodoxy, their belief in God, their belief in Mormon teachings, they're pretty similar to older Mormons. It's in areas of behavior and their feelings about social issues that we really start to see a difference.
What do we mean by millennials? I'm not sure a lot of millennials like the term. I'm using it because it's easier to say. You say the next, what do you say, the next Mormons, I guess is the way you put it. But how are we describing this generation? You mentioned, what is it, 18 to 36, did you say?
18 to 36 at the time of the survey last year. So now millennials would be 19 to 37. And as far as characterizing the generation, that's a great question. We could be here all day talking about that. And it certainly is a generation that does not really like to be characterized. If we were to draw kind of broad strokes, we would say that this is a generation that is very concerned with inclusivity and with tolerance. So those are values that have been instilled in them and have been reinforced, I would say, by popular culture that they have imbibed.
The summary of the report says the largest generational shifts seem to have started between the boomers and the Gen Xers. So this shifting right. that's been going on right now, that didn't start with the millennials. Generations started shifting before that.
Exactly. So in terms of generational behavior, we're looking at four different generations, from the silent generation now in their 70s and 80s all the way down to the millennials in their 20s and 30s primarily. And, you know, we can sometimes chart a 30 or 40 point difference in how they feel about certain issues or how they might be keeping certain practices of the LDS faith. It's a pretty interesting generational shift that we are observing in a lot of different areas.
I wanted to ask you about how Mormonism is different. You say that what's going on in the wider culture may be even more significant for Mormonism's future in America than what is happening in the Mormon subculture. Explain what you mean. Why is this more significant or potentially more significant for Mormonism?
Sure. So the context of that comment was in a section about why people leave the LDS Church. And I think it is important to have the conversation of what is going on within Mormonism that may be appealing or not appealing to millennials. You know, there are some things that are very, very good, like the emphasis on missionary work, volunteerism, that seems to really strike a chord with this generation. There are some things that are pretty clearly an alienating factor, like the church's stance on LGBT issues. So while it is important to have the conversation within Mormonism about what is or is not appealing about this particular religion to this generation, it is very important to position that in the context of what's happening with religion in America everywhere.
Yeah.
This is not just a Mormon thing. Yes, young people are leaving the fold within our church, more so than in previous generations. That's kind of indisputable at this point, judging from the numbers, where this trend is going. It's not nearly the level of disaffection that we've seen in some other religious movements so far. So that, I suppose, is somewhat encouraging news. But it's definitely a problem, and more so than it was in previous generations. But this is a problem across the board in American religion. Last year, PRRI did a study where they found that actually in the millennial generation, generally 39% now say that they have no religion, no religious affiliation. So almost 4 in 10, which is very different from what it was when the silent generation and the baby boomers were that age. Disaffiliation was not so much a thing at all in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s.
I'm going to ask an incredibly obvious question, which I know has an answer that we could deal with for an hour, but why? Like, give me a basic sense of why it is that we think this younger generation is becoming disaffected or maybe disillusioned with religion in general.
Well, it's not a dumb question at all. In fact, it's a tremendously complicated question that has many facets. I guess the short version would be some of it is demographic. There are demographic shifts that are happening that correlate with disaffiliation, one of which is people being single. There is a correlation between singleness and disaffection. I think that we could have a really important conversation about the ways that Mormonism may in particular make single people feel alienated within the fold. But it's definitely clear that married people who are still within the church have higher rates of attending church and feeling good about church, and that they are more likely just to stay at all than single people are. So that's kind of interesting. We also are seeing this, I would call it a relativism of belief that has been a widespread part of culture. And there are many beautiful aspects of that. But when you're looking at maybe a literal view of some things like prophetic authority, for example, that is not the easy sell it once was, or if it ever was, with older generations. If authority is going to happen well with this generation, it needs to be relational authority, and it happens best on the local level than it does with a sort of distant relationship with Salt Lake City.
Huh. I actually want to dig into that, and we'll come back to that in a moment. One of the things you write in the summary of the survey is that you often hear suggestions among leaders about, you know, what are we going to do to get those who have left the fold? When leaders are sort of wringing their hands about how we get people back, you say one of the things that's missing is a directive to listen. What do you mean there?
Well, just as an example, this was 3 days ago, so it's very fresh in my mind. But on Sunday, when I was sitting in gospel doctrine class, the lesson was this lesson about, you know, why people in the 19th century might have left the church. Pint of cream. There's an argument between two women over a pint of cream. There's an argument about a guy who doesn't get a seat in the Kirtland Temple dedication. And so really the whole lesson is about the idea that people leave for trivial reasons, that they leave because they're offended by small things, unimportant things. They allow Satan to take hold of their heart. And, you know, at some point I raised my hand and just said, we love this story. People who are still in the church, we love that narrative because it lets us off the hook completely. We've done nothing wrong. We're the righteous ones sitting in these chairs, and we have nothing but judgment for the people who've left. But we're not listening. I mean, there is no good, reliable research that backs up this claim that people are leaving because of a pint of cream or some other really trivial thing. But we're not listening to why they are actually leaving. I think that makes me passionate about this research, that I hope that we can, at least through the deep listening that is possible through a major sociological study, give some other explanations, some deeper explanations for why people leave.
But you also write this, that these efforts among leaders to get people back seems less aimed, you say, at responding to the needs and questions of these former Mormons than at forging them into the people active Mormons think they should be. Is that what you were getting at there in that little example you mentioned from Sunday school class last week?
Yes, I would say so. And that may have been strongly worded, but I do think that more listening needs to occur. And, you know, we don't have any institutional channels in which young adults can have their concerns voiced in a formal way to figures in authority and have those be heard. And that is becoming clearer and clearer that it would be helpful for us to have that. We also have not had this deep level of intergenerational divide between the leadership of the church and the membership of the church in all of LDS history. So, you know, we're talking about a church that was founded by a young man even as recently as when Thomas S. Monson became an apostle. He was only 36 years old. For that to happen now, more than half a century later, would be extraordinary, to have an apostle appointed in his 30s or in his 40s, like was the case with Gordon B. Hinckley and Boyd K. Packer as well. That just doesn't happen anymore. And so we increasingly, instead of having intergenerational representation among our leaders, we have only members of the oldest generations, and we have a young church in terms of its membership who don't necessarily have a voice.
You mentioned that more than half of Mormon millennials don't really watch General Conference. And it's interesting you say that a lot of otherwise Orthodox Mormons are kind of skipping conference, even though it's easier to watch. You can go online and watch some of this stuff. We actually ran the numbers this morning. I asked our producer, Elaine, to mention, what is the average age of a person who spoke at the last General Conference in April? And it was 66. That's the age group. The average age of the Mormon leadership is 76, actually. If you take Gary Stevenson, who's 61, he's the youngest in the Quorum of the Twelve. So does that get to that generational distinction that's why younger people don't relate so much with their leaders, because they're just a lot older?
Probably. I think that's part of it. Age definitely is a factor. Certainly the General Conference viewing statistics are pretty interesting. We saw only 44% of Mormon millennials who are still members of the church, most of whom say they are very active in the church, but only 44% said they'd seen General Conference within the last 6 months, which is very surprising. I mean, and it may be that technology is a double-edged sword in this case. General Conference is also available in so many other ways. And we were only asking about General Conference viewing. So if you read a talk, that wasn't included in this particular question. But still, 44%, considering that the oldest Mormons had a rate of almost 78%. So that's a huge drop of more than 30 points in General Conference viewing.
What does it say to you, do you think, about their regard for their leaders? You referred to it a bit earlier, but the sense that some have, and it may not be fair at all, but that since they're older, they're a little out of touch. They're not entirely keyed into the needs and ideas of this younger generation. Can you make a causal link, I suppose, to why fewer people are watching General Conference of that generation and how they think about their leaders?
You know, causality is always a hard thing just looking at data. I mean, I've been doing a lot of oral history interviews as well to kind of flesh out the data. I could tell you that based on those two things together, I don't think there's a lot of hostility toward leadership among Mormons. This is not millennials. This is not a rebellious generation, so much as a generation that's looking for things to be relevant. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that we asked them was about the areas in which they would like to receive guidance from their church leaders. And we asked them a number of things like, do you want to receive guidance from your church leaders about certain cultural standards like white shirts for men and facial hair or shoulder coverage for women, skirt length for women? Do you want to hear about things like prayer, kindness? Do you want to hear about practical things like financial preparedness, the need for an education? And one of the things that came through most clearly that I was surprised by was that it's not just that millennials aren't terribly interested in hearing about the cultural standards of the church. In fact, their levels there were very similar to older Mormons. Mm-hmm. But what was most surprising to me was that the numbers on things like I want to hear from them about kindness, I want to hear from them about prayer, were 15 to 20 points lower than they had been for older generations. So even on religious issues, there is a distance there.
Wait, well, what do they want to hear?
That's
I mean, if they don't
question.
Want to hear about kindness and compassion, what are they expecting to hear from their leaders? I don't get
well,
that. That surprises me.
I think that's where you're seeing the 44% attending General Conference at all, right? I think that's where you're seeing that they don't care necessarily about that kind of guidance in the numbers that their elders cared about that kind of guidance in. That doesn't mean that all of them are like that. I mean, we had just over half say that they wanted to hear about prayer, for example. It's not the ringing majority of their elders, but it's still, you know, a majority. And we'll have to do some longitudinal studies and look in the future to see, is this just something that they're going through as a stage? I hear that a lot in questions about my research. Is this something they're going to, quote, grow out of, unquote? Or is this a generational effect that will be lasting and time will tell, essentially?
Yeah, you don't know, do you? But you do know that the boomer generation, like two-thirds of them left religion for a time. But when they started having kids and wanted more stability and a house in the suburbs, they came back. You can't say with the same kind of certainty that this young millennial group, if they leave, will return.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because Wade Clark Roof's research about the boomers in particular, most of them who left actually didn't come back. It's a story we love to tell. They came back, but it's not necessarily borne out by the data. I would say that more of them came back than we're likely to see with Generation X and with millennials returning to organized religion, just because the culture has shifted so much. I want to point out that it's not just religious institutions that are declining. It's all institutions.
Yeah.
It's how people feel in terms of their confidence about government, their confidence about educational systems, the media. All of these institutions have seen an erosion of confidence, and religion is just one facet of that.
All right, I want to get to some of the particulars of what you found, because some of this is really fascinating, and I want to bring the voices of some actual millennials into this studio. So we're going to take a break and come back in just a moment. Jana Reese is with us. Her forthcoming book is called The Next Mormons, next Saturday. That's July 29th. She's going to be speaking and answering questions about Mormon generations as part of the Sunstone Summer Symposium here in Salt Lake City. It gets underway next Wednesday. You can get details about it on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about millennial Mormons. This is the youngest generation of adult Latter-day Saints. And you can make some assumptions about the group, that they're more liberal, for example, in their religious views, more inclined to leave the fold. Some of that is true. Some of that is not. The religion scholar Jana Reese has been part of this extensive survey of this generation of Mormons, and she's joining us today to explain what it is they're finding. No surprise, millennials' perspective on faith is similar in some ways, different in other ways. She's a religion scholar, as I mentioned, Jana Reese, and she's got a book coming out next year, which will work through a lot of this. She's joining us. And joining us now, Rosemary Card, who is an active Mormon, a founder of QNUR. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. Brilliant. Nailed it.
Okay. It's a company that creates LDS temple and baptism dresses for young Mormons. She's also an online contributor for LDS Living magazine, and she's joining us here in the studio. And Rosemary Card, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Tanner Gilliland has resigned from the church, along with Samantha Shelley and Connor Snyder. He's co-creator of Zelf on the Shelf. It's a blog, a YouTube channel, and a podcast for post-Mormons, and he's joining us here in the studio. And Tanner, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
Rosemary, you first. I want to give your sense. How do you describe, just generally, we'll get into some details as we go, but how do you describe this generation of Mormon millennials? Are they much different from the older generation as you see it?
I mean, I think it's tricky for us to say that we are different because we didn't know. We don't know what you were like when you were our age. You know?
We old folks, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't want to make big judgment calls on you guys. But I think we differ in the sense that currently we are considering other options. Not saying that we're, you know, jumping out of the ship and immediately doing other things, but we're thinking about that and thinking about what would it be like if I did leave? What would it be like if I felt differently on this aspect? And just mulling over those things and considering them. And I think that's healthy.
Jana Reese, there was one really interesting question, a lot of them actually, but one of them that stood out to me is that, what do millennial Mormons think about the question of whether Mormonism is the one true faith, the only, like only true faith question? Because that may get to what Rosemary was just talking about in terms of people thinking, this generation thinking there are other things out there.
Yes, I think that's a good point that there is, as I said, this kind of relativism. It was interesting to me to see that, and I'd have to look at this again at the data, but my memory of this part of the data was that the differences on that particular question about the LDS Church being the only faith leading to exaltation were not that huge generationally. Where we actually saw more of a difference was in gender, that women were more likely than men to be a little more open to other options than you would possibly imagine. These are, you know, Orthodox Mormon women.
Yeah. Tanner, how do you describe now, sort of with the perspective being outside? You've been inside clearly too. How do you describe Mormon millennials, the distinctions that there might be, the similarities that there might be?
I think the big difference with our generation is with the internet and particularly social media, we don't have that same insular culture that the older generations and the stability of the insular culture that the older generations experienced. So our community isn't just, you know, our neighborhood, our congregation, the United States. It's all of a sudden we're part of this global community with tons of different perspectives and methods and ideas. And so that's cool because it opens us to like Rosemary said, new possibilities, new methods of doing things. But I think there's also some tension there as well. You know, we're kind of in this postmodernist age where there seems to be no rules, no stability. And so in some ways, I think our generation experiences, you know, some of the adverse effects of nihilism and things like that. But on the other hand, we're plunging into it with an independence and a willingness to accept the pluralism of our existence and the world that we live in and trying to make it better for everybody. So we're very motivated by ethics and social causes and justice and that sort of thing.
Let me ask you both, Rosemary and Tanner. When you've seen people who've left the church, is there a main reason for it? Or start Rosemary, for you, not just necessarily leaving, but raising questions. Tanner, for you, is it historical questions? Is it, you know, questions about the truth claims of Mormonism? Is it they're angry about the LGBT policy of the church, which was really controversial? Or was it a lot of that, all the mix of that?
We were all offended and we wanted to sin. I'm just kidding. At least in my associations, and there are lots of reasons that people leave, and in my opinion, none of them are invalid, and I think that's an important discussional point that needs to happen across the board for Mormons. But in my experience, it's been a lot of intellectual issue, usually spurred by some sort of conflict, whether it's an exposure to church history, whether it's, you know, an incident with a church leader that kind of makes you think, huh, maybe like things don't work quite like as I thought. And then the plunge into the information that's available from the internet kind of opens the doors and offers the forbidden fruit in that sense. So my experience has been, it's been people who have thought about it, researched it, and have drawn these sort of intellectual conclusions about it.
Rosemary, what are you saying?
I agree with Tanner. I also feel like, you know, we are raised to understand and believe that this church and this gospel ultimately brings happiness. And if you're learning about historical things or a leader says something to you that's upsetting, that happiness in a way can start to be diminished. And so if you're involved in a group that isn't making you happy, it would be really easy to say, like,
what's the point?
Why am I here? Yeah. You know, and like, why am I giving 10% of my money to this group? So in that sense, I get it. And I also think that there's this idea that like, you're either in or you're out.
Yeah.
And once you're out, you're out. And I hope that we can get to a point where it's, we're all just people trying to figure this out and coming and going and gaining and having new experiences. And I think that's all good.
Jenna Reese, what did you find about that question of you're either in or you're out? Are Mormon millennials rejecting that as a you know, the way it has to be?
You know, I think that many Mormon millennials are trying to find a middle way between that sort of extremism and also the all or nothing thinking that says you have to believe all of it. You know, that if you have a crack in your testimony, then it's all going to fall down. Hopefully, there's some maturity in people being able to navigate that. I wanted to say that your question about why people leave by generation is an interesting one to me. Overall, when we surveyed the former Mormons, we found that some of the top reasons were I could not reconcile my personal values and priorities with those of the church. I stopped believing there was one true church. But among millennials, the top reasons were I felt judged or misunderstood. I did not trust the church leadership to tell the truth surrounding controversial or historical issues. And then number three was the church's position on LGBT issues. That in particular is interesting because it wasn't even in the top 10 when we surveyed Boomer and Silent Generation former Mormons about why they left the church. That wasn't on their radar. But LGBT issues was third for former millennial Mormons.
I found that really interesting that they left for experiential reasons. And it seems to play. I know you were joking, Tanner, about that idea that, well, we leave because we were we want to sin or we feel what was the other one? Or we feel offended, right? Like those are the kind of the go-to ones. But doesn't the idea that they're leaving for experiential reasons play into that narrative you hear that people don't actually leave the church for legitimate reasons, but, you know, they don't have the self-sacrifice or self-discipline to stay in the fold? Jenna Race, what do you think about that?
Yes, it's related. I think that where the church makes a little bit of a misguided approach is in saying that the reasons that people are offended are trivial reasons. For example, some of the write-in comments from our survey were very interesting to read and a little bit heartbreaking, frankly. You know, and a story I told at that gospel doctrine class on Sunday was of someone who had been married to a man who turned out to be abusive and left him. He had abused her, threatened her children. What happens then? The church lets him keep a temple recommend. And she left the church. Did she leave the church because she was offended by something silly? Or did she leave the church because the church sided with someone who was abusive? That's a legitimate question. This is not some trivial thing that we can dismiss or we can say that she was a sinner. That is so simplistic. and not compassionate.
What do you guys want when you go to church? Like, what did, Tanner, what did you want that you weren't getting? And Rosemary, what do you want? Like, what do you want out of that experience that you don't think you're really getting?
It's hard to say because for most of my time as an active Mormon, I found it very fulfilling and felt like it was meeting my spiritual needs and things. But ultimately, it came down to truth for me, is that I was more interested in.
So they couldn't really do anything. They can't resolve that question for you. If you think it, those truth claims are not really true, even though you felt okay going to church, that's not enough.
No, at least not with their current sort of paradigm of looking at it. Hmm. I think if with that kind of middle way that we were talking about earlier. I think that it's possible to, at least for them to be more open about it and kind of take the RLDS Community of Christ approach of being like, hey, yeah, there are some difficult issues. And yes, people did make big mistakes. And yes, it hasn't been as we've said it is. And then at least from there, we can draw a conversation. But at the point right now is you can't even talk about those things without being immediately shut down or ostracized or, you know, asked to be quiet. So if we could just say, you know what, let's take the truth no matter what it is or where it comes from, then we can have a dialogue about how to build a safe space for everyone's spirituality. So what I'm looking for is truth and a genuine connection to something bigger. And when I feel like I can't get that, well, got to look for other places.
You think you would have stayed if they would have said, look, we don't really care, Tanner, what you think about the Book of Mormon stuff. We know you don't buy that story, and we know you have some trouble with the behavior of Joseph Smith and polygamy and all of that stuff. But stay with us. We don't all have to believe the same things in the same way. You think that would have kept you in the fold?
I don't know that it would have kept me. Now, I would say, and this is probably the first time I've ever said this publicly, but I think there is something about being with your tribe and worshiping, however loosely defined, within a context that you're familiar with. There's something really special about that. And so while it may not have kept me, I think that I would be willing to participate and to be a member of that community if they actually wanted me, and not some corporate caricature of me, but me with all my ideas and let me be the master of my destiny in that, and recognizing that we're part of a big community. And I think there are organizations that are doing that, things like Sunstone, where it's saying, hey, listen, Mormonism isn't just about being a registered member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but it's a culture, a community, and we're all part of that. So I think they would hold on to more people that way. I certainly would be willing to participate with that.
What do you want at church?
I want to learn about Jesus. And I know that sounds really basic, but I think if there was a really big effort to focus on, like, doctrinal basics, things like the inclusion of people who are different, letting the small things roll off our backs, loving people for who they are, those types of things that I feel really drawn to would become more of a driving force, rather than lessons on things that I feel like this is kind of one of those, like, let people govern themselves types of things. Like, why are we so worked up about, like, the 14-year-old having her shoulders bare? Like, NBD, not a big deal. Let's focus on, is she bullying someone at school? Like, is she being kind? Is she being a good human? I think I would love that. And I think it does happen, but
yeah,
it could
always improve. Of course. Jan Rhys, what do you make of that? Because what Rosemary wants is more basic compassion. Let's forget about the particular details about all of the rules necessary. It's kind of like the Pope Francis approach in Catholicism.
I feel like we are able, if we are focusing on those basics and we are seeking our revelation from God as we're taught to do, as Joseph Smith did, we can figure out the nitty-gritties on our own, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jana, what do you think? Are you hearing that from millennials?
I am hearing that from a lot of millennials and some Gen Xers as well, that they're more interested in questions of where your heart is, where your spirit is, rather than whether you're wearing a white shirt and tie and how you are presenting yourself to the world. You know, I think if there's something that older generations might learn from millennials is that older generations might have focused too much on outward appearances. And in part, I would say that has been cultivated in the particular time and place that they came of age in American culture, when it was very important how Mormons presented themselves to the world. Anti-Mormonism was real. Certainly the suspicion of our subculture was very real. Maybe we're in a different time now and we can reevaluate some of those things.
That's Jana Rees. She has a book about all of this coming out next year called The Next Mormons. Next week, she's speaking at the Sunstone Summer Symposium. You can get details about it on our website, radiowest.org. Rosemary Card is a designer and a contributor to LDS Living. And Tanner Gilliland is co-creator of the blog Zelf on the Shelf. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation about Mormon millennials. I want to ask about one component that I found interesting, and I know you can't say too much about it. This is about the word of wisdom, the Mormon prohibitions against certain things in their diet. I know Benjamin Noel, your colleague, is still working on an article, but give me a basic impression if you can. You say that there was a surprising generational difference here between those who obeyed the word of wisdom and those who didn't. What can you tell us?
Sure. So, yes, Ben and another colleague of his are working on an article specifically about this, so I don't want to steal their thunder, but I can certainly say that we saw some generational difference in the word of wisdom, particularly in regard to coffee, which was the biggest surprise in our survey. You know, previous studies of Mormons have looked at alcohol, and so we had some longitudinal data to which to compare that. And it was higher. It was different, but it wasn't huge. With coffee, we're looking at a new thing. We're looking at something new. And it's not just millennials, but also Gen Xers.
I found that really interesting. You also said that younger Mormons were less likely to see the word of wisdom as essential to being a good Mormon. That was interesting.
It was interesting to us as well. When the word of wisdom data was first analyzed, Ben actually emailed me with this like exclamation point kind of email. Wow, this was not what we were expecting. And frankly, if we were expecting that to be a source of major generational difference, we would have asked more questions about it. You know, we only had a couple of questions about the word of wisdom. And now I have many follow-up questions that I wish that we had thought to ask and will hopefully ask next time.
I'm not going to steal any more of Benjamin Knowles' thunder on that point, but to the millennials here in the studio with us, do you notice anything particular about like word of wisdom stuff? Like, cup of coffee was a big deal for a lot of Mormons for a long time. Are people lightening up on that question? Do you see, Rosemary?
I see a lot of people with the idea that like, hey, we've got some really big issues going on.
Who cares about a cup of coffee?
Who freaking cares? Yeah. Let's make sure that we are focusing on like being kind to refugees rather than did someone drink a cup of coffee? If the prophet says don't do it, okay, I'm not going to do it. But I'm going to be sure that I am like properly balancing that when I'm focusing or when I'm meeting someone and they say they're a Mormon but they drink. Well, are you nice? Are you serving? That's what I care about, not so much about like what's in your cup.
What do you see?
It's hard to say exactly. I went to BYU Idaho, so there's not a huge like the word of wisdom is still a very hard line.
There, right?
Yeah. But I think we're kind of realizing that maybe a former approach has been a little. It's hard to say hypocritical, but maybe hypocritical because it's a principle of health, right? And so you can say, oh, I don't drink tea or coffee, but I drink a big Mountain Dew or a energy drink every day. And you say, well, where do you draw the line on that? So I think we're just kind of recognizing that, okay, exactly as Rosemary said, there's bigger fish to fry. We've got much, much bigger things to worry about than what someone's eating or drinking. And also recognizing that some of the things we thought were really terrible aren't necessarily bad in moderation in all things.
But it's interesting, Jana Rees, it seems like a lot of millennial Mormons, and we're talking about the ones still in the fold, they are, in some cases, more traditional, more conservative.
Yes.
So we can't just say that Mormon millennials are lackadaisical about some of this stuff. And Rosemary, I'm not saying you
all.
Are.
Yeah.
I'm a
millennial
believer.
Mormons. Millennial Mormons have the highest rates of any generation for home and visiting teaching. They love them some food storage, which was very interesting to me. I was not expecting that, especially since, you know, many of them are younger and maybe only live in an apartment, for example. It's a little harder, but they are very enthusiastic about having a year's supply.
Really? Who's got money
for
that?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's a good question. I have the same question. But, you know, I just want to say that in terms of some aspects of behavior and most aspects of belief, millennial Mormons are very orthodox. They are very much in line with what their elders would expect of them. But then there are these other things in which, like church attendance, general conference viewing, word of wisdom, and to some extent letting their temple recommend credentials lapse, that they are not adhering to what their elders would expect.
Where are they politically? Are they more likely to – you say they're more likely to lean Democratic.
Well, they're – yes,
right?
They are.
Than
but
older generation.
It's still not – right. It's still not a majority of millennials who are Democrats. So it's the most balanced political generation of Mormons. We saw 46% Republican, 41% Democrat, and then the rest independent.
Yeah. That, so that's still pretty right there on the right. What are you guys seeing? What do you see among your peers, Rosemary, in terms of politics? You guys talk a lot about politics.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I just see a sense of like being uncomfortable with saying like I'm in the Republican boat and I agree on all of these issues. And so I feel like a lot of my friends are similar to me in the sense where conservatives say that we're liberals and liberals say that we're conservatives. And I just am like, I'm just Rosie trying to figure out where I stand on stuff. And I don't have an understanding or, you know, a hard line opinion on all things. And I'm comfortable with the idea that my opinions and ideas will change with time. And I'm just trying to figure it out.
I wanted to ask about this. This seemed surprising to me, Jana Reese. The survey found that millennials have the highest rates of literal belief in the scriptures of any generation. Now I find that hard to believe. Did I get that right? They have the highest rates of literal belief in the scriptures than any generation.
And they are also the most likely to be reading them as often as possible. So even higher than the oldest Mormons, millennials were much more, or slightly more, I should say, not much more, but more likely to be reading their scriptures at least once a week and many times daily. So that's an interesting difference. In terms of this idea of literal belief versus non-literal belief, I want to point out that, you know, a literal belief in the scriptures is not actually a classical Mormon position. Yeah. It is a kind of a cultural position that has been the dominant narrative of millennials' lifetimes because evangelicals have had that conversation and kind of forced that conversation. So it may be that the idea that the scriptures are literal and should be interpreted literally is a little bit of a departure from their elders because their elders have a more classical Mormon position. We can't really tell that from the data. We can just tell you what they said.
I don't know what that means in the sense that what do you mean Mormon position? Like, for example, Mormons believe the Book of Mormon is an historical document that this Jewish family came to the Americas 600 years before Jesus Christ was born and began this civilization? Literally happened.
You know, on that particular question, millennials do have a slightly lower rate of saying yes to that than older Mormons. I was specifically talking about the Bible. So with the Bible, the classic Mormon position would be the Bible is correct only insofar as it's translated correctly, right?
Right.
And we have throughout our history tried to kind of de-emphasize that literal aspect, but that's not what millennials are saying, the ones who are still in the church.
Rosemary, do you and your friends talk about whether or not – does that ever an issue where you're chatting and they're like, I don't really believe it literally happened this way in the Bible or the Book of Mormon, just whichever you think. I mean, do you guys have conversations about that?
Yeah. Actually, just recently we were talking about like, okay, if I have a conversation, an event happens in my life and then I write down in my journal that night like my recap – and then if someone were to come back hundreds of years later and read that and then rewrite it, it's going to be pretty different than that original experience, right? And so we talk about that and we're trying to figure out, like, you know, these word-for-word conversations, how authentic are these? How are we supposed to be taking these? Are we supposed to be taking them? As like this conversation went down and this is what Jesus said. But at the end of the day, for me, I look at it as I do believe that it's the word of God. And so I can.
So whether it happened just exactly like that doesn't necessarily matter to you.
Yeah, I don't really feel like God's hands are tied. Yeah. That as I read it and if I'm seeking his guidance through it, he can tell me what he wants to tell me, and I'm fine with that. I'm not going to get flustered or fussy about, did Nephi say this sentence?
Yeah, but you don't feel that way, do you, Tanner? Because the truth claims are a big deal for you. It's one of the reasons you left.
Yeah, and I understand the nuance of scripture and of just that approach of being like, hey, listen, we can't take everything literally, and I think that I've tried to give it a lot of leeway in that way. But I remember being in a BYU Idaho science class where they're telling us that the great flood never happened, and so you kind of have to say, well, if that didn't happen, you know, what about all these things where, you know, the prophets are saying, well, we're basing a lot of important doctrinal or timeline kind of issues on these key issues. Adam and Eve being in an evolution class and saying, well, I mean, maybe it wasn't exactly like that. And so for me now, I guess I would say that if I had any belief in scripture, would be very much that, like a sort of poetic expression of a person's highest ideals, and that doesn't need to be taken literally and shouldn't be taken literally, because the more you try to tie all the ends together, you see that it doesn't all quite fit if you take it all literally.
Let me come back to LGBT issues, Jenna Reese. There's some sense that this was a watershed moment for Mormonism, that it was a trigger for disaffected or questioning Mormons to leave or start raising questions, or for people who had, you know, gay people and their families to start asking questions or to leave. You found that Mormons, and we talked a little bit about this before, but Mormons who took the survey were mostly positive about the policy. Only 29% said they disagreed with it.
With the first half, right?
With the first half part about it. Where are millennials on that issue? It seems like there's a big distinction here. As you mentioned, just tell me where they are on this particular question.
You know, on the policy, most Mormons who are still in the church are supportive of the policy, both halves. So the first half being that if you're in a same-sex marriage, you are going to be coming up for a disciplinary council for apostasy. The second half is that children of same-sex marriage are not going to be eligible for baby blessings or baptisms or other things until they're 18 and can make that decision for themselves, at which point they have to renounce their parents' same-sex marriage. That second half of the policy was less popular, still had majority support, but it's kind of notable that 42% of Mormon women who are still in the church either somewhat or strongly disagreed with that second half of the policy. Former Mormons almost universally hated both halves of the policy.
Yeah.
Especially young people, but women in particular who are still in the church did not all care for the second half as regarded children.
Your generation talk about this issue much? Does it bother you?
I never heard of it. Absolutely we do. And, you know, when I was 16, I moved out of my family home and I moved into the home of a gay couple. And so this is a policy that's very near and dear to my heart. And while I don't understand it, and
understand what the policy?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense to you. You don't like it.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get why that little kid can't get baptized. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with saying, like, I don't get it. And I either hope that more things will change or come out, or we'll gain more information about it. Or maybe I will gain more personal understanding about it. And I think that's kind of where all my friends stand. Some of them are saying, you know, this is so upsetting. I don't want to be affiliated with a group that would do this. Or others are saying, this is upsetting. I do not like this. But there's a lot of stuff that I do really like about this church. And so I'm going to stay.
We're running out of time, so I want to get you all on this question. Do you think the Mormonism of the future is going to be less rigid about certain rules? Once the silent generation is no longer around, and this early collection of boomers, do you see something more progressive, Jenna Reese? Or do you think that those who are in are very much in, and that they're not going to lead the church in a very different way?
It entirely depends on what they decide to do in terms of staying in the church or not. If people like Rosemary stay, I have every hope that things will become less rigid and perhaps more tolerant over time. If people like Rosemary – no pressure on you, Rosemary.
Sorry. No pressure on you, Rosemary.
If people like Rosemary leave, yes, then we are looking at a church that will be very similar. I mean, if the culture of the church is so firmly entrenched that it cannot change and it makes it intolerable for people who feel differently to stay, then the church will remain in its own entrenched rigidity.
What do you think?
I kind of share the same opinion. I either see it becoming more open, more inclusive, less rigid, or becoming smaller, richer, more conservative, more insular. Either they're going to double down or they're going to say, hey, this isn't working. We need to ease up a bit.
Rosemary, final question. Do you feel then, like Jenna said, no pressure, but does your generation on some level feel a kind of responsibility to take those common sense approaches you were talking about earlier and impose them into the way Mormonism is practiced? Like, do you feel that? Are you excited about the potential of changing the direction in some way of Mormonism in that way?
I am excited about the future of Mormonism. And I think we've had a great past. We have a great present, and I think we can only improve. I do think it is difficult for people who have different ideas to stay. It's not an easy process. I really, really hope that they do, because I think, you know, the different ideas that we have, if people are, you know, unique, that only blesses us to have like a deeper pool of knowledge. And so I think it's going to be tough, but I do hope people stick it out, because I think when we're in charge, we can do great things.
It's Rosemary Card. She runs Q Noor. It's a temple dress company. She's also a contributor to LDS Living. Joined us here in the studio, Rosemary. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Tanner Gilliland is a co-creator of the blog Zelf on the Shelf, aimed at post-Mormons. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And Jenna Reese, author of the forthcoming book, The Next Mormons. Next week on Saturday, July 29th, she's going to be speaking at the 2017 Sunstone Summer Symposium, talking about all of this and all the details. You can get the particulars on our website, radiowest.org. Jenna Reese, thanks to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Zoe Wolf McGinn, the show directed by Tim Slover, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.